you. I know it's hot, and what we want to do is try and push this thing along, but before we really do that, there are some things that I think what we need to do is really refocus and energize ourselves. Energize ourselves to begin to now look forward of where we are and where we're going as Aboriginal people. When we started the movements back in the 1970s, there really was only about 6 or 7 young Aboriginal people who were between the ages of 17 and I think the eldest one was 20 back then. And of course, we rode on the back of a moratorium called the anti-Vietnamese moratorium and became involved. And of course, as young Aboriginal people, one of the things we were sick and tired of was seeing our old people have conferences year after year after year and just passing resolutions and send them off to some white fella, asking them, please, mister, can we do this? Please, mister, can you take the shackles off us and free us? And so we began to think about this, and anyway, it just so happened in 1969, a lot of young, educated black fellas turned up in Sydney, all at once, and it was just like karma, you know, that it was a time, it was a shift. And when we arrived in Sydney, we were just doing our thing. And we were dancing, looking for girlfriends, looking for boyfriends, and trying to get ourselves educated. Then all of a sudden, we came together at the old foundation in George Street. It was the only place in Sydney where we could come together. And the old people kept asking and kept moving around the country, passing these resolutions all the time. And so we crashed a meeting. There were 6 of us. Isabel was one of them, a bloke called Paul Coe, her brother. Billy Craigie, Gary Williams, Gary Foley, and myself. And we crashed a meeting at the University of New South Wales, 1969. And it was called the Land Council, New South Wales Land Council. And when we went in there, they were all talking about the problems that they were having and they were passing resolutions again. And all those young fellas sitting at the back, and then all of a sudden, Paul's and all of us looking at each other, and they're saying, go on, say something. And so we all looking at each other, because, you know, we're respecting our elders, and they all there, and we kicking each other along, you know, and we all end up with sore ankles after a while. And then all of a sudden, you know, Paul said, will you the mouth? And I looked at him and I said, what am I going to say? And he said, well, say whatever you're going to say. So I stood up and I said, well, look, I think it's time we started putting action into place. And like I'm sitting there and truly I'm shitting myself because I'm talking in front of these old people, you know, out of turn. And I considered myself to be out of turn. And so they're nudging me from behind, and so I'm sort of, you know, like a little robot and a little wind-up toy, and I'm sort of going along there. And I think they were, I hope, and I haven't asked them all yet, whether or not I was saying the right things, because nobody ever punched me in the face after, but it seemed to work. And then all of a sudden the old one said, oh, this is marvellous. We were waiting for the day when you young people would turn up and take our struggle forward. Well, as soon as they said that, they said, come, a bloke called Frank Roberts, who's now deceased, he said, come up here and take the floor. I turned around and looked at all this mob and I could have killed all of them. Because none of us were ready for them to invite us up the front and start talking about what it was. We were not prepared. We were just young people, mouthing off, and then the old one said, come up and take over. And we shit ourselves. We're looking for all the holes in the floors and looking for ways out of that building we could get. We couldn't get out of there quick enough. But we got caught up. And from that day onwards, they put the pressure on us and asked us to take the issue forward. And of course, we had no idea where we were going and what we were doing. Absolutely none, that's true. But we knew in our heart where we wanted to go. And we started a movement. And it was just a movement of minds coming together. And mind you, that little group that we had, we were from the Wiradjuri, the Gummeroi, I think they were the main two. Bundjalung. Oh, Bundjalung. And so what we did, it was a bit of a strange relationship between all of us because none of us trusted each other. But we knew exactly what we wanted to do. And we forgot about all the other things and we knew we wanted to take the movement forward. And of course we did. And we rode on the back of those demonstrations. They invited us. We crashed the demonstrations, and we didn't have flags in those days. We were just, you know, having signs up, Aboriginal land rights and all that. And then when the anti-Vietnam movement closed down and started winding down, then it became the Aboriginal movement. And with that, we had six Aboriginal people walking out the front and about 3,000 white fellas walking behind us. And the movement really got going, and then we started encouraging a lot of people. We started going to towns and taking down, going after pubs that banned Aboriginal people. We started going after everything. Everything the Perkins and everybody did in the 1965. And so we were riding on a high, and nothing could stop us. You could put a bomb in front of us, mate, and we'd walk straight across it. There was no way in the world it was going to stop us. But what I want to say to you today is this. Somebody planted a minefield in the last 30 years. And they planted a very clever minefield, because right now, Aboriginal people are so fucked up, and pardon my swearing, but we are so fucked up in mind and energy that we got no idea where we're going. No idea. Too many of our people have chosen the mortgages and the high purchase of motor cars. You ask black fellas in the public service and the educated ones, leave the bastards and fight. What's wrong with you? The first thing they say, oh brother, you have to wait till I pay off my mortgage. First, I got 25 years to go. We haven't got 25 years. I'm home in the bush in a little country town called Gadooga. We're out there and we're watching the people kill themselves. When we started in 1969 and 1970s, there was a massive death rate. We called it the infant mortality rate. We had the highest infant mortality rate in the world. Right now, we have the highest morbidity rate in the world of adults. We had a meeting in Moree about 3-4 weeks ago. And Ray Swan's father, an elder at Moree, came to the meeting, and all elders were sitting there. And he came in, and the first thing he said to us was, look, I want to put something to the meeting of the Gomeroi Council. He said, I want to ask you whether we pass a resolution now, and we agree amongst ourselves here that we need to wind back the age of an elder. And so we all looked at him. And we said, what do you mean, Unc? He said, we amongst ourselves, who were 70 plus in Moree, we did a count. And he said, there's 8 women over 70, and there's 6 men over 70. We started doing some little things in the western towns. And in most of those western towns, the mean age of Aboriginal people is 35. There are no more people over 70. They are dying, and they're dying quick. And he said to me, and he said to the floor, we need now to wind the age back of an Aboriginal elder to 45 years of age. Because we don't have Aboriginal people living past 50. Now that, a lot of you would never know this unless you're there. Very few of you, you support us in a great numbers, but very few of you come across those mountains to the other side and see what's going on out there. Have a look at what's happening with the people. You've got no idea how many times we go to funerals in a week. You know, we got people dropping dead in their 30s. We got people dropping dead from heart attacks in their 30s. We have people having open heart surgery in their 20s and in their 30s and in their 40s. Yeah? And told that they only got a few years to live. And the other thing that's on the increase amongst a lot of our people in the 40s, in their ages, is cancer. They're dying of cancer. We're all out there asking ourselves, what the hell's going on? What's happening? Why are the people dying of cancer in large numbers? Why are the people just dropping dead from heart attacks? Now, of course, some of the contributing factors is drug and alcohol. But you see, the white fellas are clever. They don't give a damn. They're feeding our people drugs. They're feeding our people alcohol. They're making a lot of money out of it. And a lot of our own people are getting on the bandwagon and doing it. You know, they talk about capital punishment. I say kill them. People who push drugs, kill them. Because right now they're destroying a lot of us. You know, I saw a movie once, and it was about the Italian mafia. And they were talking about the drugs. And they were saying, well, let's just feed the blacks in the ghettos because we'll make a fortune out of them. And right now they're making a fortune out of young blacks in the country towns. We have to stop that. And the question is, how do we stop that? How do we begin now to redefine ourselves as Aboriginal people? Because we've lost our Aboriginality. We're losing it in a big way. Too many of us are saying, have given up. But you see, if you look at the criminal records at the Institute of Criminology and look at the records of our young people, our warriors, the kids who don't give a damn about the whites, are our young people. These kids are between 7 and 12 year old. These kids don't care. They see the whites, they see their parents oppressed in such a way that the kids can't deal with it. A lot of people say that it's child neglect. But you see, those kids can see that their parents can't survive on what's happening. Those kids are not silly, they're smart kids. But what's happened now is that we have a situation where Aboriginal youth have now been criminalised. Criminalised because they dare to object. They dare to say no to a white man. They dare to tell a white man to get fucked. They dare to walk up past a white man in a shop who discriminates and pelt a bottle or a brick straight through his window. Those kids dare to walk up to a white man who's discriminating all the time and don't like blackfellas, and they'll pinch his car and drive it into the river. The kids don't care. The kids are fighting. And have a look at all the institutions in New South Wales. They're building more in New South Wales because the prisons are full of our kids. And so how do we, as a collective group of people, with some degree of responsibility, begin to redirect that energy to get our kids back into the fold? How do we start asking those kids to start channeling their energy to fighting who the true enemies are? How do we begin to bring them back to ourselves and bring them back to the fold? So I think what we need to do is to really redefine. So I challenge Aboriginal people who are here today that when you go home, when we go home, try and do something about saying to yourselves, what is it that I can do now to bring the kids back? What is it that I can do to change the focus? How can we begin to channel that energy? And I think that's the only thing we can do. Otherwise, if we don't, we've lost the battle. And right now, it appears on the surface as though we have lost the battle. And I'll just finish on one more thing. This report that went on about the Aboriginal Embassy, there was an inquiry. You all know about it, I suppose, about what to do with the Aboriginal Embassy. The minister, believe it or not, this bloke, Jim Lloyd, chucked his staff in an aeroplane and flew out to Gadooga, a little country town, to sit down and talk with me about this place. And he said, what do we reckon? My words were to him was this: you move the embassy, we'll start a movement in this country, you'll never fucking survive. It's as easy as that. You touch it and we'll come after you. We don't need bombs. We don't need bombs at all. We know the power of people power. Yeah? We know how to move things. Like here we were, four little black fellas put a tent up on that lawn there, put an umbrella up, not a tent. Let's get it right. Yeah? And when we put that umbrella up, Muhammad wouldn't come to the mountain, but we fucking took the mountain to Muhammad. And the mountain stands strong. And unfortunately for them, it grew bigger. Without them knowing it. Yeah? So let them come. But we got to play a trick on these white fellas. You know, they give us nothing, so we've got to go after something. One of the things I said to him is that we want free access to that big house up the top. And that's what we're after. We want free access to that big house. But I'm glad Uncle Al said what he said. The law of the land. One of the things that they were talking to me about was the legitimacy of the Aboriginal Embassy. They were saying, yes, they saying to me now what Gough Whitlam said to us in the tent up here when he was in opposition, before he became Prime Minister. Gough Whitlam said to us, he said, you are a fragment of young people from different nations, but you don't have the authority of your elders or your people back home and the rest of Australia to truly represent the issues that you're talking about. We said, we may not, but we are consistent and we understand what that movement is. And that's why we're successful. What we put up there hasn't changed. It will never change until we sit at the table and begin to talk it out. And the day is coming. The day is coming, let me tell you. Never think that we're going to give up. I have to extend my life a little bit so we can keep this bloody thing going, you know? Okay. But it's going to happen. And so what we're going to do here, our objective is to give proper legitimacy to this country. And the way we can only do this is to bring the law people to this place here and put the law in the ground here. And we'll sing the law here. And we want them from all over this country to do it. And only the elders can do that. Only the people who are the law people who can do that. When we do that, there will be nothing that will move this place. Because then we will have the legitimacy, we will have the authority that they say is missing. And that's our objective, is to bring the people here again. We did it once before. Only this time we're going to bring them all, and it's the only way to do it. And so what we need you to do is to understand we got some things happening and we're going to make it happen, and this time next year you will have no idea what's going to happen here, because we're working on what it is now. We bring the law here to this country, and then this embassy will go forward and we'll have access to that big house up the top there, whether they like it or not. Thank you.